Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, there's that echo again, but it's gone. This is Sala Cordy. This is Taino Radio, man. You got it. You got it. It's 10:01 p.m. This is Thursday night. This is Taino Studies Power Hour. And as the co-host is anthropologist and super friend from Cuba, her name is Natalie Uber Huber Rodriguez. What's up?
What's up, Sana Cordy?
Very good, very good, man. This is it. You know, I changed the title of the show, Taino Studies. What do you think about that one?
I did that. Yeah, I noticed that. I like that. Taino Studies, that works for me because that's what we're doing, right?
That's right, man. And, you know, you're the anthropologist and also, you know, expert in folkloric traditions and stuff, you know, and I'm a Mexican spiritual leader of Arayeke, Yukayeke, with also standing in Nahuake, you know, from the past there. And today, check this out, Natalie, we have a special guest today with us in our show, in our Taino Studies show. Last week we were talking about you know, we were talking about language, Taino language, right?
That's right.
Yeah, in our first interview right here to tackle the language, we have Javier A. Hernandez, and he is the author of Primario Básico de Taino Borinquenaiki. And before he speaks, I just want to give a little... I just want to introduce him. He's the first... written book that's tackling this whole learning experience of a modern version of the Taino language. And again, let's say it again, Taino Borinquenaiki. Okay? So he worked many
Taino
years.
Taino Borinquenaiki, yeah.
There you go. Yep. And he worked many years in the reconstruction and restoration of this beautiful indigenous Caribbean language for the enjoyment of future generations. So I just want to say I know a lot of folks and who have purchased the book and who are talking it, actually, who are speaking it. I know a lot of people personally. Gallo, if you're listening out there, who's in Old San Juan, he is excellent. He speaks it fluently, I tell you right now. Just want to tell you that. And also, check this out. It's the official language of Arayeke Yukayeke. That's right. It's the official language, so we're trying our best to learn it. So, without further ado, Javier, are you there? Tagwe.
Yeah. Tagwe, Mabrika. How are you?
Welcome. Wow. So, you know what? Natalie, take it away, man. You got this.
All right. So, let me just say the first thing, Javier, when I was looking at your bio and everything, you know, because I studied anthropology, so linguistics is part of that study in terms of the United States model. It's one of the main pillars of anthropology. So language has always been a fascination of mine as well, growing up bilingual, especially. So I see you described as a hyper polyglot. Now I know what a polyglot is, and for people who don't, yeah, exactly. It means someone who speaks multiple languages. But why don't you tell us what a hyper poly? Because that's even more impressive. I mean, polyglot is impressive, but hyper polyglot. I mean,
yeah. Yeah. So hyperpolyglot, from my understanding and from what the organization, there's actually an international association of hyperpolyglot. So basically, if you speak more than six languages, some
right.
people say seven. It's not a law, you know. It can flow, but basically around that range, then you would be considered a hyperpolyglot. Now, anything above that, I guess it would still be hyperpolyglot. I don't think, you know,
mega hyperpolyglot.
Exactly, mega hyperpolyglot. I don't think that
exists.
The highest is just hyperpolyglot.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it's like if you speak one, you're monolingual. Two languages,
right,
bilingual.
Right.
Three, trilingual.
Bilingual.
Now, if someone speaks four, I've never heard of a quadrilingual. I've never heard that. Usually by four or more, it's multilingual.
Right.
Or polyglot. Yeah, yeah. But
right.
then when you get into like the more higher number of languages, then it just becomes so, whoa, like that. So then it becomes a
right.
hyper polyglot. Yeah, yeah.
So can you just, you know, just for people's people listening, your own background, obviously, you know, you speak English, Spanish as well, I'm assuming. Can you give us just a few other languages you've studied
yeah,
as well?
So bilingual as a child, you know, growing up in Puerto Rico and then
right,
also
right.
in the United States. And then high school, I taught myself French, Italian, and Portuguese.
Oh,
Yeah, just by myself, like at home with books.
Yeah, wow, that's even more impressive.
So then when I did that, I realized, I have a gift for languages. Yeah. So then I just like ran with it. I just didn't let it just like simmer there. I just I went all crazy on it. And then in college, then I just took German, Chinese, other if the college didn't have a course on it, I would get the books anyway from some other source. And learn other languages, and I just learned them easy. It just clicked. All these languages just clicked, and I had the good pronunciation. I got the verb conjugations down. My accent is pretty good. With pretty much most of them, and then I was already an adult working, but I still had like I was studying languages at night or on the weekends by myself, you know, kind of like
just for fun,
like a hobby. For fun. No, at this point it was just for fun. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah,
and
that's
then,
even more amazing.
And then, and then I started learning languages that were similar to Spanish, like Catalan and other ones.
Mm-hmm.
Then from French, then I split it to Occitan. Yeah, my God, there's so many languages that. And then what got me to the at this point, I would be a polyglot, hyperpolyglot. But what
yeah,
got me
multilingual.
The,
yeah, you're at least six, I think.
But what got me way out there in the hyperpolyglot sphere was that I learned enough of these other languages that I could read them. Like, for example, Asturiano, Gallego, and all these other languages.
The Spain dialects you're talking about, is that what you were saying?
All languages in Spain.
Castellano.
And also there were some in Italy, like Sardegno, you know, like in Corsica, Sardinia, Sicily. I learned how to read those languages, not speak it, because it's really difficult to even learn how to do that, you know. But at least I could read, like I could read signage and books. I could read books in those languages.
I mean, that's impressive enough, too, because a lot of people can do the opposite, you know, speak something but not necessarily read it.
Yeah, that's so I did that, and then Russian also, I could read Cyrillic. Alphabet.
God. That alphabet.
Which actually I taught my daughter how to write Cyrillic, so she loves it, but she writes her name everywhere
wow.
in Cyrillic. It's funny,
backwards R's everywhere.
Oh, geez. So it's like I love language. Obviously, I love languages. I'm so pro learning languages. I always tell people, please, you don't think you can't learn a language. You can always, you know, put effort. Some people have a gift, yes, but that's not everything. A lot of
like
it
you.
Is wanting, having the purpose, having a purpose to learn it. You know, because many times if you're in a language class, any for any language, if you don't have a purpose, if you're just being told learn it and that's it, then many people don't learn it. But if you have a purpose and a motivation, be it work, be it you're in love with someone or whatever. You know, there's so many motivations to learn language, and they're all good. Yeah, yeah. So
definitely. Definitely. I totally agree. Again, as an anthropologist, language, I fully believe learning any language is always a benefit. Never, you know, no matter what reason you learn it for, it broadens the mind. It definitely gives you more connection with the wider world. It's a beautiful thing. But, you know, it's amazing with you because, you know, so many people have trouble just learning one other language other than their native one. So to be able to learn as many as you have, but also enjoy it, is something something really special, especially because, you know, a few of those languages you mentioned, you speak Spanish and you speak English. So, like, I can see, like, okay, Portuguese, Italian, I mean, you probably get a good grasp on that since they're in the Spanish or Latin language families, even French to a degree. And then also German is sort of related to English. So, but then you said Chinese too. Now that's like a non-Indo-European language. So that's like with a whole nother alphabet as well. So that's a tonal language too, which is different from any of the other languages you mentioned. So that is even more difficult. I mean, my brother is learning Japanese because his wife is Japanese. And the difficulty, especially like people like us who are used to speaking Indo-European languages, so we go by those Indo-European rules
exactly.
that we have kind of planted in our head to like forget all that and try to learn like a language that doesn't fall into that family and doesn't follow those rules is really impressive.
It's totally different.
So,
one of the things with Chinese is interesting is that if you're not Chinese, you're like, you know, Boricua like me or you know, Hispanic, whatever, and you're learning like Chinese, the pronunciation is harder, but the grammar is easier.
Really?
For example, in Chinese, you don't conjugate verbs. You just learn one word, and that's it. Yeah, there's no hubiera estado or corríamos.
Right.
None of that. Or even in English has that. But then in Japanese... Yeah. The pronunciation is easier for Latino, but the grammar is harder. Japanese grammar is like really difficult.
Yeah, Japanese
the pronunciation
is on formal too. So that's,
exactly, yeah.
Whereas like Chinese, like the same word can mean three different things depending
how
on how you say
it,
right?
The tone, yeah, exactly. If you say ma, it could be a horse or it could be a question.
The way you say it. And that's, I think, throws a lot of people who aren't tonal language speakers. But
you have to work at it, but then the good part of it is like in Chinese, you don't have to learn all these tables of conjugation. You just learn one word, like for go is chu. That's it. There's no chu du 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 or chu du 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 du.
Right. Well, nothing's beyond two syllables, I don't think.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's incredible. Again, and especially those also have non-Latin based alphabets, as we know, Chinese and Japanese, and you know, any non-Indo-European language, you're going to have to go outside the Latin based alphabet they're all used to. So, you know, segueing into that, we were talking last week about reconstructing languages, and I was saying how reconstructing an old language, especially one that's been, and they usually have been, suppressed or oppressed for so long, to the point where they were made almost extinct or virtually extinct, and they've never had a written form, which is the case for a lot of these, you know, indigenous languages in the Americas. But I also made a comparison to the Irish language that's been revitalized over the past century or so, because it was the same deal. So let me just ask you a little bit. So when writing this book and coming up with the Boricua Naiki dialect, tell me a little bit about your process and the research you did to create this dialect and to come up with this this written form and this vocabulary, because again, that's a hard undertaking to take for anyone, let alone like at an individual level.
Yeah, no, thank you. Great question. Yeah, so I started, I would say, maybe 10 years ago. Yeah, this has been an ongoing long process. And you know, I wanted a book where I could learn Taíno, basically, you know, when I was going to learn these other languages, and I never found one. Never, that didn't exist. So then I tried to contact some other Taino groups. No one got back to me, whatever. The thing is that then I found all these lists, like word lists of Taino words.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, wow, it'd be great if someone would you know, use these words or come up with, you know, like reconstruct Taino. It'd be great. So I kept waiting for someone else to do it. And then I realized...
And they never did. You want someone,
no,
you got to do it yourself. Something done, you got to
exactly.
do it yourself, right?
No one's doing it, or if someone's doing it, it was top secret. I don't know. I tried to contact people. Nada. Okay. So basically, I'm like, in that moment of my life, I had enough time, because then it's difficult. You have family and kids and stuff. So that time,
right.
I was
in
like,
between learning
like,
your, like, 10 languages and everything.
10 languages. Yeah, I was like, you know, and I was single back in the day, and I could, like, oh, I had time to do this. I at least started. So
right.
I started learning. So basically, I started learning all those Taino words. But then I'm like, okay, I have to give this structure. I can't just, like, say words out and that's it. So basically, and then I started researching what were the most successful language revitalization. Okay, and the best example was Hebrew, what Israel did with Hebrew. And the process that Eliezer ben Yehuda, that was the guy who mm-hmm. developed modern Hebrew.
Right,
and when
right.
he first did it back in, you know, this is like in the 30s and 40s, people
right.
were laughing at him. Like, ah, mira que ridículo, yeah, whatever. You know, that's not going to work. You're not pure, you know, because it's Hebrew, getting from old Hebrew, but then mixing it with Arabic words, German words, some
right.
other words.
Yeah,
it's a mishmash.
Influence
it's a whole,
as well, which is
exactly
right.
exactly so many different influences. But he made it work. He made it work. He developed a grammar for it and everything. And people in those times are still making fun of him, like, oh, come on, you can't do that. That's ridiculous. No one's going to speak that. It'll be like Esperanto, like a few people, blah blah blah. That's it. And look today, millions of people speak Hebrew like a first language. Because
mm-hmm.
there was a concerted effort. There was it wasn't just like three people in a club speaking Hebrew. It was like a whole effort to do
right.
this. A lot of people were behind
it.
Well,
it's the first language of the Mizrahi Jews, I believe, isn't it?
Exactly. Many people speak it and dream in Hebrew. It's not just like a second kind of like side language. It's a first language for many people. So then I saw how he did it, his method of methodology of reconstruction. And something that I liked was he made it, but yet also simplified it so that it would be easy to learn, you know, because when I was going to start developing a modern Taino, I didn't want it. At first, it was impossible. I mean, I can't go back in time and see how Agui Banat was
right.
thinking, so I can't do that. Okay. So, but I also wanted to make it easy to learn so that you don't have to get a PhD in linguistics to learn how to speak. I want it to be like...
No, that's a
words.
great strategy, too,
and, yeah. Yeah, but, yeah, because if you do it too difficult, no one's going to learn it, you know, and then
right.
some people are going to be like, oh, but it's more pure, yeah, and you only have 15 people speaking it, yeah, yeah. But if you make it easy to learn, easy to construct verbs and all this other stuff, more people will learn it. And so I started, you know, researching languages that were similar or related to Taino that are still around. Okay.
So Arawak.
So I reached Arawak and then Locono and then Garifuna, was also with Garibe. But the main one that I saw that had a lot of words was Wayuu, which is in the
mm-hmm.
Guajira Peninsula in Venezuela. Okay, Venezuela and Colombia, that right there, the Wayuu people. So
right,
Wayuu
right.
language is very related a lot to Taino. It's like an Arawak language also.
Mm-hmm.
But they had a lot of words. So I was like, wow, this would be great to use a lot of their words and combine them with Taino words, because they had
mm-hmm.
words for things that we never knew in Taino. It was
right,
erased,
right.
and we don't know.
Yeah, and that's another thing when revitalizing a language, right? Like new vocabulary comes up that didn't exist hundreds of years ago. So when you like
exactly.
bring back an old language, and you gotta create new words, right? A lot of the time.
Exactly, exactly. Yeah, yeah. And like, you know, for example, trying to think of one, can't think right now of one, but like, let me see, like one was, crap, it was like Katunasu, it's like for airplane, if I remember the construction for that, it was a metal bird.
Is that what it literally translates to?
Literally, yeah. So those are things where I had to create because I couldn't, because the Tainos never saw an airplane.
But
if you're going to be a modern Taino language, I had to create something that, you know, I just could not put the word for airplane and just assume no one's going to ever use the word airplane. So I had to create.
Right.
So I had a lot of language creation, word creation, and I wanted to make it very literal but also meaningful. So every word took a lot of time and effort, you know, because I didn't just want to, like, throw two words together and, okay, move on. I wanted to really make sure
it makes sense.
Made sense and was obvious and easy to learn. So basically, a lot of Wayuu words, some Arawak words. The Arawak grammar was very difficult. I mean, it's one of those almost like I would say like Japanese, or you have to like be born into it to learn. So I got a lot of the grammar from them. Some of the plural I used from Garifuna. Again, it was like a reconstruction. And again, I didn't have a committee of people to come up with them. You know, again, I was like working solo. So I had to do a lot of executive decisions.
Sure. That's what makes it even more impressive. You know, like usually these undertakings are taken on by huge committees of multiple people. So.
No, believe me, I would have loved if there was a whole committee, if there was like 20 people and we all worked on this together. And I looked for it and it was never there. So I did it myself. I wasn't going to keep waiting for someone else.
Right. And this was all self-funded, I assume? Like you just
self-funded. Yeah. This is just, a lot of this work was done on airplanes or when I was sitting in an airplane or in a hotel room. Traveling, because one of my jobs before was traveling a lot around the world, so I would use those times when I was like in a hotel room, hours and hours to dedicate to Taino. So I did that overseas a lot, sometimes in Puerto Rico, sometimes in New Jersey, in Florida.
That's where I'm from. Awesome.
So a little bit. I mean, this whole effort was done in many different. It wasn't just me sitting in my Mayagüez and I did the whole book. It was like. It took literally almost like 9 years to do this whole thing. And then, so that brings me to the point that now I'm working on another book because after all the feedback I got from this first one, I'm making another book, reforming the language a little bit and adding more. I've been getting more vocabulary, more technological vocabulary.
So it's expanding the vocabulary, basically.
Exactly, the lexicon of modern Taino. Oh, and then the name, so Taino Borikenaiki.
Right, yeah.
I've gotten a lot of people, which, you know, they like it, but then other people are like, yeah, I'm from Cuba or I'm from Dominican Republic, and we're not Borinque. Yeah, so I'm like, yeah, you know what? You have a really good point. And they want to learn it, but okay. So I'm going to basically, instead of just kind of focusing on being Boriqueng, you know, although a lot of the root words were from Puerto Rico, I'm going to be calling it Taino Naiki, just basically Taino language.
So that's, okay, I was going to say, so the word Boriqueng Naiki comes from meaning
language.
I especially appreciate that because, like, I mean, not to say, like, obviously, Puerto Rico has been huge in terms of, you know, Taino studies and Taino restoration movement and everything. But yeah, like people like myself who are Cuban Taino or Dominican Taino or from, you know, even like Jamaica or other places. Yeah, it's always like,
exactly.
Well, is this cool for us to speak to, or is this, you know,
and
you know, to be fair, like. In Cuba, we spoke like the Siboney dialect, which was probably slightly different, but I think it would be cool to unite us all under one kind of more standard, common, like modern Taino language.
And that's what this is trying to do. It's a project. It's a work in progress. It's a living, you know, it's not just like, this is it. It's like the Bible and no one can ever change it. No, this is going to be changing through the decades and onwards.
Oh yeah, language.
Learn it and more words are added. And I would love if more, like Taino words from Cuba and Santo Domingo, and even from Haiti, if there's still some there. Jamaica can integrate more vocabulary on this. Yeah, I mean, maybe that's something one day we could work on. Who knows?
Right, but, right. So that's amazing, though.
The name in this new book is Taino Naiki. It takes away the Boriqueng so that other parts of the Caribbean can feel that they can also use it. Because it's
more inclusive,
Puerto Rico. It's more inclusive,
right.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, it's always going to have that Boriqueng origin, how the language started with me, whatever, but mm-hmm. I don't want to just keep it to Boriqueng. I want to, have it used in Jamaica and Cuba. I mean, it would be amazing if it was, like a pan-Caribbean language.
Right, right. If it was a full, we're all part of the same, technically, ethno-linguistic group, right? So
exactly. Exactly.
It would make sense for us all to have at least a kind of common language that we could share within our ethno-linguistic group, even in the different communities. So that's
exactly.
Cool. I do appreciate that. Especially being a non-Puerto Rican Taino person myself, it's always,
yeah.
People always assume when I say I'm Taino that I'm Puerto Rican because, again, that's what everyone associates with.
Exactly, yes.
So I think even just, that change in that word alone, and it just shows you how powerful language is, it definitely is more inclusive.
Exactly.
So this second book, from what I've heard, it sounds like you're really kind of focusing on how vital, expanding this vocabulary and getting this language out there more is to cultural revitalization. And again, couldn't agree more. Language is culture, in my opinion. And I told you I did a whole study with Irish language, which coincided with the Irish cultural revitalization right after they became independent from England after 800 some years. And that was a big undertaking. So talk to me a little bit about that. Are you going to be focusing more on the cultural revitalization along with the language in this new book?
Yeah. The in terms of the cultural revitalization, that's very, very important. And also, like what you mentioned about the vocabulary, I'm trying to expand the vocabulary, and not just, because I want to focus also on conversational, so that you can have a conversation about anything in Taino,
mm-hmm.
but not just where's the kasabe, that type of stuff. That, I want you to have a conversation about your grandma, or about, hey, I'm hungry, where's the pizza? Common, basic, mundane things, but also about science, like math.
Did you get my text?
Exactly. If you want to text in Taino, that'd be amazing. or if you want to talk about geography or geology or space.
Mm-hmm.
Not just where's the crab in Taino? Just keep it as a primitive thing, but make Taino...
Right.
Used in many
modern,
spaces,
yeah.
Modern, make it modern. So then there's a lot of other words that I have to add that are adding, like science-related words, geology,
absolutely.
Geography, continents. The Tainos didn't know about China. So I have to, I have to Asia and Australia and coral reefs,
right.
All these other things that, I'm pretty sure they knew about reefs, but other things, like world events or other. Oh,
right.
And also political
and technology,
science, international relations,
and,
technology,
yeah.
Computers, all these other things that are modern. So I want things to be used in a modern way, but yet you can use it to talk about grandma, to talk about el tío, whatever. But also you can talk about world events, you can talk about world issues, like that.
Yeah.
So exactly, politics, culture. Everything. And so that's taken me a lot of time to go through all those word families.
Oh, I'm
and
sure.
All those, oh my God, you don't even know, it's crazy. But I love it. It's like every word that's created has a lot of emotion to it, has a lot of meaning, has a lot of time that I put into it. I say that because I just don't want people to think I just throw words together and okay, that's it.
No.
Yeah.
But you have to admit, with language revitalization, there is some degree of creativity involved in it,
exactly.
Right? Because
exactly, yeah.
When you do have to create these new words and reconstruct, basically, you are creating words you are creating and adding to the language. So it's like part research and you know, and science, but it's also part creativity, right?
Exactly, yeah. And you know, and that's to make it easy. It's like all these things that go into it. It's like, is it easily pronounced? Is it easy to understand? Like, does it sound like another word? That's a big one, because I don't want it to sound like another word and people confuse it or something. So, yeah, all these things go into every word. And, and then also the grammar. That's another thing where I'm expounding and expanding the prepositions and the suffixes at the end.
Right.
You know, it's all these little details so that one person can say a sentence that sounds very short, but it has a lot of meaning in it. Exactly. So you can say something very complex. So, you know, so that it's very complex. You can make a complex sentence talking about, like, 55 years ago, my grandma worked in the factory. You give details like that in one sentence, but it won't be like a mile long sentence. It'll be very short. But yet all
so you're trying to keep the syllables kind of pretty succinct then, as opposed to, or like, you know, having words that are like 10 syllables long or something.
Exactly. So it requires a lot of suffix endings at the end of verbs. But then it may seem a little like, oh, this is really difficult. But once you learn that, it opens up a whole world. It's amazing. Of all the things you can do linguistically with suffixes, it's crazy.
Right. And yeah, that, I mean, so the grammar, I'm assuming you're basing on like just the general kind of Arawakan grammar model,
exactly.
More or less.
Exactly.
Right. So
more or less, because it's very simplified. It the actual Arabic grammar is very difficult.
Right. From what I've read, it is. That's why I was like, I mean, you're saying you're trying to make it simple, but I was like, well, what I know from Arawak grammar wasn't that simple. But
yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But so I was curious. You mentioned before how you traveled and everything. So were you speaking to people of these communities? You mentioned the Garifuna, the Wayuu, and everything to try to, you know, to play into your research and get some more ideas about their language structure when recreating the Taino language?
Unfortunately, I could not. When I traveled, I never went to these countries, but I did research, you know, like through books and through videos, you know, like that. So pretty much, especially like through books. Like I got a Garifuna grammar book that I ordered through, I think it was Amazon or some other source.
A few
years ago. But so that helped me develop some of the grammar I included. I'm trying to also include, you know, like when I do like another grammar issue comes up, I try to see, does Arawak solve this issue? If not, does Wayuu solve it, or does Garifuna solve it? You know,
right.
Like,
so you got three resources.
Exactly. Yeah. When people, this is important to know. When people ask me how do you do this, or why this language, why not that one, and I try to explain to people. It's in the book where I explain. It's like, imagine if Spanish disappeared. Okay, then 500 years later, someone tries to recreate Spanish. Okay,
right.
And all they have is a list of 500 words of Spanish. Well, the best thing I would do is look at Latin, look at Portuguese, you look at Italian.
Right.
And through those languages, you can recreate. Not going to be perfect. It's not going to be el español que hablamos ahora, but it's going to be something. It's not perfect, but it's going to be something that uses Spanish words and a lot of Spanish influence in it. So that's what I try to explain it to people. When I explain it like that, then the people get it. It's like, oh, got it, yeah. So that's why I had to go through Arawak, Wayuu, all these other languages. Now, I couldn't go to Mayan or Quechua because they had nothing in the
relationship.
No.
Yeah.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, or Nahuatl.
Exactly,
too far removed.
Exactly, yeah.
Right. Well, I mean, and that was another thing, you know, we were talking about last week. Like, people always say, oh, well, it's not going to be as pure, et cetera. It's not going to be exactly the same. But I mean, language changes all the time. We know that. I mean, the way we speak mm-hmm. English and even Espanol, like, today is not the same as it was spoken even 50-100 years ago, right? I said to Sana Cori, I was like, read Shakespeare if you don't believe me. Nobody talks like that, right, when they're speaking English.
Exactly.
So, I mean, language is not – it's not static. It's like culture. It's ever-changing. It's ever-evolving. It's ever expanding its vocabulary as new technology and new terms and new, you know, inventions come to light. So, you know, that whole idea of, oh, well, it's not pure, et cetera, is kind of a moot point in my opinion. And I'm assuming you agree, because nobody
is ever
going to speak the same that they did like I said, 50 to 100 years ago. It's just not how it works.
Exactly. I totally agree with you. I wish if I can go back in time and record a Guibana talking. I wish I could do that. or someone had a secret YouTube video of a Taino speaking in 1500. That'd be great. I would love that. But that doesn't exist. So I have to go, you see, because that is not available at all to no one. No one has this information, you know. So I have to go through other sources, you know. So there really isn't, and I've heard that criticism. Oh, it's pure. I'm like, well, no language is pure. Spanish isn't pure. Spanish has a bunch of languages. Exactly. So there isn't
a
pure
Arabic
language.
And Latin.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly. Visigoth y todo eso. Yeah, yeah. So exactly. Again, but sometimes it's not really about language. It's like other issues and other agendas that are involved with that. But it's important to realize that language is never dead. Languages are always moving and living and changing.
Yeah.
And again, going back to Hebrew, when Elisha ben Yehuda started to do the Hebrew, people were laughing at him like, you were a moron. Like, you can't do this. Come on. No one's going to speak this made up language. Ha ha ha. And look now, you know, you see?
Yeah.
It's one of the, you know, exactly.
Right,
so
and even absolutely, and even within, I just learned the other day, which I thought was really cool. Sephardi Jews, like the ones in Spain, spoke a language called Ladino with a D.
Ladino,
that was
which
was like a mix of Hebrew with Latin influence, you know, like and Arabic influence as well. So, like, even within a community or an ethno-linguistic community, there's always variation, right? There's always dialect
mm-hmm.
variation, regional variation. You know, within one country or one geographic area, even there's always there's no pure form, in my opinion. I think of really anything. It's like the concept of racial purity that doesn't exist either. Nobody's one thing,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly. Actually, now that you bring that up, here's a little another project I'm working on. It's still in the infant stage, but it's going very well. I'm working with a colleague. He's in Tunisia, okay, and the project is, and you know, I pretty much wrote the whole thing. It's recreating again. It's a revitalization, but it's script. The Arabic language, or not the language, the Arabic script that was used to write Spanish.
Okay.
So back in the, you know, like Al-Andalus time, the
Mozárabes,
these people, they were Spanish, but they spoke either Arabic or Spanish.
Right.
But they wrote
like
Spanish in Arabic letters.
Spanish, right.
So they wrote Spanish in using Arabic letters. So that was lost. I mean, literally, that was, I mean, they were stamped out the Inquisition. They were killed. They were driven away. I mean, it was really bad. So
right.
Then,
well, when all the Moors were expelled, I think they got rid of all the anything that had like any Islamic or Arabic influence was like
exactly. They just like
right.
get that out of here. Okay. So,
right.
but so then the other, you know, a year ago, I was like, oh, wouldn't it be great if you could write Spanish but using Arabic letters? That'd
in Arabic.
Yeah. So I started it. So I already have a whole draft of this whole project. So, and I already have it. So, like, I mean, I've used it. Like, I've shown my daughters and like, oh, look, this is your name. And it's called Alhamiado. I didn't make that up. That's what it was called, Alhamiado. So Alhamiado is, you know, I'm trying to help it come back. So I have my colleague in Tunisia who's helping me organize it, make sure it fits Arabic calligraphy styles and all this other stuff.
That's so cool, because I've always, yeah. I love Arabic calligraphy. I love calligraphy in general. Like, I love Japanese calligraphy, Arabic. I think it's beautiful. So, and it truly is like an art form in of its own. So to be able to do that in Spanish is like, that's such a cool concept to even try
exactly.
to think about, you know?
Exactly. And it's great because it's like a way of saying, you know, you try to destroy us, literally destroy this script. 500
right.
years ago, and here it is, 2021. Bow, here we go. Exactly.
That's I think that's a great message when it comes to any of these language revitalization projects, right? Because the reason a lot of these languages, you know, almost died out was due to, you know, cultural suppression and oppression, basically, like
exactly,
99%
exactly.
of the time, right?
Yep.
So to be
exactly.
able to bring it back, hundreds of or even thousands of years later, and say, "Hey, you tried, but you failed. You tried to destroy this, and thought you succeeded, but you didn't." It's like a really kind of in your face kind of thing, like to any kind of cultural oppressors from back then, saying, "You know, you can never kill something like this because there's thankfully oral tradition still exists, and we have a lot of people who can." Still remember enough that we can piece it together. It's like piecing together a really old puzzle where the pieces are scattered, but they're there, right?
Exactly. I like to think of it sometimes like linguistic resistance or like linguistic revolution,
right, yeah.
almost
oh,
kind of like
yeah.
Like,
still there?
Yeah. I'm sorry, you cut off for a second. So.
Oh, no, you caught off too. Yeah, you were saying, yeah, it's definitely like a form of resistance.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's a project I'm trying to work on. I'm trying to, while at the same time doing the Taino project. It's a lot to do.
It's got a lot on your plate, right?
A lot on my plate. And amazingly, you know, I'm married, have a family, so it's difficult to get some of the time to do this. So a lot of the time, I usually have to really do a lot of work on this is when I'm like in an airplane or in a hotel room.
There you
like
go.
That, when I'm
yep.
traveling around.
You do
yeah.
it where you can, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. So yep. When can we? And for anyone listening, before I know Sana Kori's got some stuff he wanted to ask you, but when do you think we can expect this new book? If you give us an estimate,
I'm thinking early to mid next year.
Oh, okay.
I mean, I mean, hopefully sooner, but I'm going to give myself a conservative. Yeah.
That's not long at all, though. That's. I mean, your other one took 10 years. I didn't know where you were in the
exactly,
process.
Exactly.
Yeah. So.
The other one took 10 years. This was taking
right.
like 2 years.
I think we're all really looking forward to that, though. I'll be on the lookout for sure.
Thank you.
Yeah, I'm going to send it over to Sana Kori now. I know he's got some questions he wants to ask. So, Sana Kori, if you're not too sick still.
No, I'm here.
Thank you, Natalie. Thank you for the great questions.
Yeah, that was awesome. I loved it. Listening to you guys. These allergies are killing me, but I'm hyper now. Wiper, the adrenaline's pumping. But
yeah.
you know what's interesting? I'm listening to you guys, and I remember, you know, I went to seminary. I went to Union Theological Seminary, and I got to learn a lot about the Hebrew scriptures, you know. And one of the scholars that was teaching he was, after a semester of taking his class, I realized that the Christians historically the Christians were interpreting the original text sometimes the opposite of the true meaning of it, you know? And then what happened was I asked them after class, are you insulted that, you know, people are using, you know, the Hebrew scriptures and interpreting it differently than what was originally intended to mean? And he just looked at me and he laughed. He says, hey, at least they're using it. If they're not using it, they'll go in extinct, you know? It's good
exactly.
they're using it. So I'm like, what? Like, he was not offended at all. You know, that the Christian church has taken these stories and adapted it to their own narrative, you know. So I was like, wow, that's cool. So I'm listening to you guys, and I'm saying, you know, a lot of people, like you said, about the mixing and stuff. I guess my question is, have you, how can I put this? Have you come across, like, resistance of, like, I guess, appropriation or whatever, using other cultures, like the Wayuu, whatever, or the Guarifuna? You know, I mean, I don't see it as appropriation, but have you come across that? Or,
cause
I just thought of my
I've
professor.
Come across it. No, that's a great question. I've come across it, but it's never been from Garifuna or Wayuu. It's from other people.
Interesting.
You know, people who never from them. In fact, in the book, I say, I'm not like hiding like a secret, you know, thing. I literally put Wayuu, you know, like the languages I use as source languages, the documents I've used, you know, it's public domain knowledge. It's not like a secret. But yet no one from the Wayuu community in Colombia or Venezuela or the Garifuna community or diaspora has ever, no one contacted me and said, how dare you? Nada. You know, it's never occurred.
Yeah, so I think they have the same understanding like my old Hebrew professor, right? He's like,
it's
hey, they're
used.
Using it. That's
exactly.
Great.
They're
just
using
it.
Their lives. Exactly.
If not, it was, you know, eventually it'll die out, whatever. But wow. Well, listen, I know you have a history. We have a common history with Dr. Yare Melendez from Nahuake, who sadly and tragically died in January. So, wow, shout out to her. I know she's listening from Guave somewhere, here in Guave.
Yeah.
So what was your experience working with her? Because I know. In your book, you mentioned her as a part of the dedication.
So when I began writing the book and working on it, I never met her. It was while I was finishing the book is when I learned about Nahuake and really got involved with Dr. Jare and all her work and just really was like amazed at all the work that she has done and is doing and was doing in Puerto Rico. And now the intercultural connections in the Carinago community. I mean, it was amazing, the stuff that she was doing. So I was like, wow, I need to learn more from her and see what she's doing and how I can contribute and help with Nahuake. And, I helped her with some language information, resources. When the book was published, you know, I dedicated a part to her. And then she was using the book in the Nahuake schools, and the programs. So that was pretty nice. And so I was helping her a lot with those issues and those things. And then sadly, I mean, you know, when COVID happened, you know, a lot of people lost contact a little bit. I try to maintain contact, but and then when she passed, I was in shock. I think I'm still in shock. When I think about it, because she was such a force. I mean, it wasn't just like, oh, Jare likes Taino language. No, she was like Taino. Like, she exuded Taino culture and passion and language and knowledge. I mean, she was a force. Yeah. And, her passing is going to be felt for years and years and years.
Yeah, I remember going to her study, her office, in Bayamón, and I was like, yeah, you got to show me your research. You got to show me. She was very guarded, you know. It was like her baby, you know, very guarded. And then one day she's like, all right, I'll let you see it. And I'm like, what? It's like the Holy Grail, you know. So so I saw her note.
Rosetta Stone.
Was like, yeah, it was,
it
was pretty. So it was pretty intense. And she did share with me that she felt that the Kalinago was as close as possible to the Taino, you know, because of the connection with the women, you know, the intertribal, I guess, wars, whatever, battles, trying to get the women. And I remember her telling me that they even did a DNA she had a DNA match with one of the members in the Kalinago people in Dominica.
Oh, wow.
It was a DNA match. And also one of the students in Nahuake had a DNA match. And actually, that video is online. It's on YouTube, in which the Kalinago welcomed Nahuake. And the girl that was there from Nahuake was a match with one of the girls in Dominica. I believe National Geographic did that sampling.
That's
of the
amazing.
DNA,
I mean, that's...
So it's on YouTube. So it kind of like supports her theory about the Kalinago and the Taino, you know, the women. How the women kept the... You know, if it was Taino women that were being taken from Puerto Rico or whatever, they were the ones that were teaching these Kalinago kids. You know, again, it was mixed, probably mixed, you know. But so it was like, wow. But I remember talking to her about all those things. So you found her very supportive, though, right, when you spoke to her and all that stuff?
Oh, very supportive. Yeah, very supportive. Great ideas. Always, you know. She was always, you know, talking about the book, ways to improve it, or you know, I mean, she knew I was working on the second book, so she knew about that, and she gave me good pointers for the second
nice.
Book. And then because of her, then I got the idea of adding in the second book. I'm going to have a like not just like words and grammar, but also like a reader, like actually write out stories in Taino that people could read.
Oh,
yeah,
that's great.
So you can actually read a few paragraphs, or maybe about Puerto Rico history, or about Nahuake, or something, you know, many things.
Yeah.
But it'll be in Taino, yeah, like that, yeah. So that was an idea that she mentioned, and I was like, ooh, that's a great idea. I included like a reader, not just like a pamphlet of grammar. Which is kind of boring if you just have grammar.
Wow. Well, you know, I have a member of Arayeke Yukayek. You know, and we use your writing, Yukayeke. So,
Yukayeke. Awesome.
Yeah, so she...
Yeah,
she's a professional singer, Christina, and she wants to say hello to you because she's been doing these TikToks, and... She's brought a lot of awareness to Arayeke and also the Taino culture as well. And she uses your language. So let me put on Christina. She wants to say hello to you and give you that shout out. Hold on a second. Oh, Christina, you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Hey, all right. Well, there it is. It's Javier. Say hello.
Taigwe.
Taigwe, Christina. Taigwe.
Taigwe. Taquatiao.
Well, tell us, Christina, what you've been doing? What have you been doing on TikTok?
Well, I've been actually using your book, Javier.
Oh, wow.
I'm a big fan of your book, and I've been using it to actually give lessons to people that want to learn. And Yeah, so you can see my TikTok. It's at Mistina Soul, MYSTINASOL. And you'll see, you know, little videos that I put about the Taino culture, but mostly about the words and the language. And there are so many people who are so interested in just reviving the culture. Yeah.
Oh, wow. That's a... I've been meaning, I mean, one of the, again, with all the 20,000 things I'm trying to do, I've been meaning to do some, like, YouTube videos of you know, so, like, pronounce the words and make sentences,
right.
And, you know, something like that. But I've never even gotten to that. But thank you for doing all that. Oh, my God. I'm as soon as this call's over, I'm going to look that up.
Yeah.
I'm already on it. I just looked up her page right now. But, yeah, that's awesome because I think a lot of the times, like, people do want to hear, like, how something sounds, right? Like, it's great to read it in a book, but you want to hear it, like, in context, you know?
Right.
Yep, exactly.
Yeah, that's
awesome. And I know.
Nina, thank you so much. Oh, my God. Wow, that just made my night. Thank you so much, Christina.
Absolutely. And I also wanted to add that there were some people because, you know, claro, some of us can't, like, speak Spanish, right, or read it, you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah.
Like, some people were asking for, like, the English version of your book.
Oh, yeah.
Well, in the second book that's coming out soon, hopefully sooner than later, It's going to be trilingual. It's going to be English, Spanish, and Taino.
Sweet. Oh, wonderful.
Yeah,
that's great.
So, exactly. Yeah.
Awesome.
So someone who speaks Spanish or doesn't speak Spanish can still learn Taino with the same book.
Wow, that's awesome.
That's great. Do you have a date for that when it's going to come out or no?
I'm trying to tell Natalie, like mid
next
year.
Yeah, that's the one he said, like next year, right? Yeah.
Next year. I mean, but not like December of next year, but like I would say beginning to mid next year. Yeah, yeah.
Hard
wow,
time.
That's great.
that's
now the pressure's on. The pressure is so on right now. Now I'm like, oh, crap, I have to really, really get
to work.
Work on this every day. Jeez. There you go.
Well, thank you for letting me say this, you know, to you. I just wanted to say that because I was listening the whole time. And,
oh, wow, thank you.
Bamatum. Yeah. Yes.
Thank
yes.
you.
Yes.
That's awesome. Thank you, Christine.
Ibokwatukan.
Wow. There you go.
Thank you.
Ibokwatukan to you. You know what? We ran out of time. Wow. Maybe we'll do a part two. Right? We'll do a follow-up.
Oh, my God.
Part three, technically.
Yeah, right? Oh, part three. You're right. This is part two of the language. It's going to continue.
Yeah.
Just like to thank all the listeners and the viewers and people who are future downloaders of this show. Please spread the word. Please share this on Facebook and everywhere so you can hear this interview. It's all archived. And Natalie, you want to say final words before we close up?
I just want to say, you say Pumatum, or I learned Pahom. That's my term for thank you in Taino. But again, that just goes to the island variation and the community variation, right? Thank you so much, Javier, for being here. It's been such a pleasure to talk to you and best of luck again to undertake something like this completely solo is such a feat, and so the fact that you're doing this is like, I mean, it's amazing, and I really look forward to when that next book comes out, and I think it'll be even more popular than the first for multiple reasons that it's so much more inclusive, that it's going to be in three languages, you know, I think it's going to be pretty amazing, and thank you again for this has been such an awesome conversation, and I'm so excited for what's to come.
Definitely.
Thank you, Natalie, and thank you, Sanakori, for the opportunity. I really, really appreciate this.
Sure.
And Christina, again, thank you.
And I know there's a lot of other people working on the language, and I'm in communication with several to do some future shows as well, different dialects and stuff. It's all good. This is what makes us the good people, the Taino, that we try our best, right, to keep it going, keep the culture going. This is awesome. Hey, I like to end the show with a song. It was written by Indy 41. She's a Native American rapper. This song is up for the Native American Awards. And she did a modification of the song to include the Taino. And she asked me to say a prayer. The song is called Creator. It's a prayer to the Creator. So I use the Boninke Naiki language in the song. So it's not the official Creator song, but she spread it around to Native circles so they know about the Boninke Naiki language. So I just like to end the show with that, with me praying in the Boninke Naiki language, okay? So I'll end it with that. And hopefully you guys want to listen. Yeah, you want to listen. And, but thank you again. Bo my too. All right.
Right now. Great. Yeah. know who I'm about to say. I've said it before, you heard it before, this time ain't like before. Greater, I'm so tired, and I miss my soul. Soul feelings, what I wanna feel. I understand the loneliness and the need to not feel. I got purpose to fulfill. A job only I can do to help me heal, so my mother can heal and her mother can heal. Cycle breakers, one of the few not broken by the cycle. Man with the wrong direction, but I'm not lying. But I'm not lost. Greater, can you hear me? I need you right now. Can you hear me? Takashila, can you hear me? I need you right now.
Ayalera, she, Abo, Ishi, Sapara, Orias, Toca, Subuna, Mamona, Toca, Abo, Wak.
Creator, can you take away the trauma in my DNA? That got my people enslaved, can you help me? Stand my ground, stand so down, protected by your shield. One of the own my soul and my will is mine. Awaken, not blind. Tell me, Creator, am I one of the crimes still hurt by you? I need you right now.
Right now.
I need you right now.
I need you right now.
I need you right now.